listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good morning. You're listening to KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. You're also listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor, and today I'm joined live in the studio by Marianne Torres. She is a member and current chairperson or leader.
Co-chair
of the Palestine-Israel Human Rights Committee at the Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane. She and I are going to be talking a little bit this morning about the escalation of violence and the things that have led up to it in Palestine, in the West Bank, and in Gaza, where there's been bombing by Israel. And we're just going to discuss all of that and how it fits into the context of the Israeli occupation. Give a little background on that for people, but this is mostly going to be, I think, diving right in to some of the nuts and bolts. If you are interested in some of the basics of this conflict from a perspective maybe that you haven't heard very much in the mainstream media in this country, I do have some old stuff in podcasts about that, and I can post a lot of resources with this podcast when it goes online. When it does go online, you'll be able to find it at praxisradio509.podomatic.com. There's a link to the archive on my show page at kyrs.org. Later in the hour at 10:30, we're going to be joined on the phone by Ayman Najim, who is a Gazan student studying in the U.S. He's going to join us by phone around 10:30. So hopefully all of that will work out, and he'll be able to give us his perspective, which I think is really important to amplify. So does that sound like everything we're going to cover, Marianne?
Sounds like it.
All right. So do you want to just introduce yourself real quick? I don't think you've been on the show before.
No, I haven't been on Praxis. I've been doing this work for a little over 30 years and studying it intensely, talking about it, teaching about it, and have been to Palestine several times. So it's very close to my heart. And the it's of course always been very disturbing just to hear the news coming from there every day, but the last 6 weeks have been especially painful for Palestinians and for people who support the Palestinian attempt to gain their freedom.
Mm-hmm. So for people following the, I guess, the news media in the U.S., to the extent that we talk about Israel and Palestine and the special relationship that the U.S. has with Israel and military aid, probably most of what people have been hearing was earlier in the spring, during the so-called peace talks, those dissolving. What's the role of, in the timeline, from your perspective,
of the peace talks, mm-hmm. for starters? I don't believe that the peace talks actually have any role at all in terms of Palestinian expectations. It's been very clear for many, many years, since Oslo, but it's become in 93, but it's become very clear in the last 5 years that the peace talks are not intended to result in any kind of peace or even negotiations. What they are is just they're a space holder for Israel to continue to gather to confiscate land and build their settlements, and what Israel has always referred to as the facts on the ground, to make that part of Palestine also Israel, to the point where it can't become a Palestinian state,
mm-hmm. which is something that's continued to accelerate rapidly.
Yes.
I mean, from the time that I went a year ago, I mean, I was showing you and Murda Ladich, who went with you, a couple years before that, pictures, and there's settlements that weren't there
when we were
the year before,
right?
And now things are drastically different than they were a year ago when I was there.
Yeah.
So I don't think a lot of people in the U.S. get that.
I don't think they do either, and I think it's hard for people to really imagine the magnitude of those settlements and of the way they surround Palestinian villages. They sit on top of hills, and which allows the settlers to go down and attack the shepherds and the farmers in their fields much easier, and to also just little by little begin to claim more and more of the land that belonged to the village.
Mm-hmm. And it's also a psychological effect.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
I see that. So the, just one final thing on the peace talks. I remember meeting young people, activists, Palestinian activists in Ramallah, who were slightly younger than me. They were 19 or 20. So their entire lives have taken place during so-called peace talks. Their whole lives have been post-Oslo in 1993. So they are... It's a generation that's largely very cynical about that idea.
Yes.
You know, just wants peace by stopping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even Netanyahu, although this has been the case since long before Netanyahu came into office this last time, but Netanyahu actually made a statement. I wish I could give you the source, but it's been so long since I read it. He made a statement to the effect that there will never be a Palestinian state, and that has been the policy of Israel since 1948. So the peace talks are, well, I'd say they're a waste of time, but they're only a waste of time for Palestine and the United States and the rest of the world. They're very definitely not a waste of time for Israel.
Mm-hmm. It's just prolonging the process.
Right.
Long enough.
Those peace talks have allowed Israel to expand. Another thing, I wish I had the percentage, but the difference in the size of the settlements in 1993 when Oslo was signed, it has just been a thousandfold.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't have done that if they hadn't all along been telling the world they were working for peace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so to go back to more recent times, all of this kicked off, this being a pretty serious uptick in in violence, settler violence in the occupied West Bank, military violence, etc. What happened?
Well, the violence in the West Bank has actually been escalating slowly for about a year now. It's becoming more intense. The army has become more and more brutal, and they're doing more and more wholesale arrests. But on May 15th, there had been a demonstration that day in response to the increased violence by the settlers, mostly, and also the army. And this was caught on tape. Two young men at two different times of the day walking down a street that you can see on the tape is pretty empty. I mean, they weren't shot in the middle of doing anything except walking from point A to point B, and they were shot by an Israeli sniper. Israel has identified the soldier who shot and killed each of those boys. And they were boys, just like the settler boys, the two 15-year-old settler boys. And even though they said that they have identified the shooter, they also said that no live ammunition was used. And so that's another one of those kind of mind warps that you hear a lot with Israel. You know, I didn't do it and I won't do it again kind of. Mm-hmm. thing. So that set off a lot of anger. And then on June 12th, three settlers disappeared, two, 15 and 16 and 19-year-old. One was a soldier and the other two were young, were younger. They disappeared. And what happened following that was just almost unbelievable. Israel went into the West Bank with its full scale, with the army doing what they called a search, a manhunt for those three settlers. And they arrested more than 400 men and boys and children. They arrested a lot of children. They destroyed many of the homes, the insides of the homes that they searched. They went into more than 2,200 homes. apparently, ostensibly looking for the three settlers who may have been hiding in refrigerators or inside walls, or, I mean, they destroyed everything. And it was very clear it was not a manhunt. It was very, very clear it was not a manhunt or a search for those settlers. Word came out just recently, I guess probably a week or so ago, and this from Israeli sources, that Netanyahu knew all along, or within a day or two, he knew that A, they were dead, and B, where the bodies were. He knew that. He also, that's a speculation. I'm not going to go into it. That he knew those things. But the belief is that, and this has been in Haaretz, it's been in the Daily Forward, it's been in a number of Israeli sources, that this invasion of the West Bank had been planned for quite some time. It was set off, the plan was set off by the need Netanyahu felt to destroy the unity government, which they did once before. There was a two times before, there was a unification of Fatah and Hamas, and that was not allowed to stand. Israel destroyed it, and that was the intent. And they also, among those 400 people that were arrested, was a significant number of the Hamas leadership in the West Bank. So that seemed to be the intent, according to Israeli sources.
Mm-hmm. It was really dramatic to watch. I've obviously here in Spokane and reading some news, but not a lot. But the general general Israeli public, the pro Israeli policy, Israeli public, I should say, the non-dissenting majority of Israeli mm-hmm. public, and many Americans also. There was a big push social media wise that spilled over into real life on the ground. This Bring Back Our Boys that was the hashtag that was used. It was, I think, supposed to be a response to the Bring Back Our Girls campaign recently in Nigeria, and used it. And I was mostly seeing it from my friends, Palestinian activists and people living there who were trying to reclaim it and use it and say, bring back our boys, you know, bring back the hundreds of
Palestinian
children
boys.
That have died or been arrested, illegally detained, tortured, etc. So in some ways that's, I mean, it's obviously true. The disproportionality is.
Oh, yeah.
For anyone who looks, that tends to be an argument that doesn't go anywhere. I think, who did what to who first, I think is
right.
What you call
People
it.
Don't understand the magnitude of that disproportionality. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's really stunning.
I'm going to try to find something I saw about that in just a second. There was a statistic about it. It was, it broke down the total arrests and deaths of children specifically.
Oh, yes.
And it was not. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll continue with what happened.
Yeah, please do.
After 2 weeks, the three bodies were found. And I read on one of the newspapers from the Orthodox community in Israel, a rabbi was trying to figure out how it was that those bodies that he apparently saw were not decomposed after 2 weeks out in the desert. There was no decomposing going on, and no signs of abuse or of their bodies other than apparently the gunshots that killed them. But the whole thing just really called into question who knew where those young men's bodies were and when did they know it. But at some point, right after the bodies were found, the illegal Jewish Israeli settlers just exploded. And you could see it in comments on the Israeli newspapers, and you could see it in 100 videos that have been posted of rampaging through the streets. It is absolutely unsafe for any Palestinian in Israel to walk around in Israel. There's just many videos of Palestinians being attacked on the streets. A number of things happened too. A 10-year-old boy was kidnapped. He managed to get away. I've read a number of stories about that. It's unclear whether his family was able to rescue him or if he simply ran, but he got away from this group. There was a 10-year-old girl in the West Bank who was just walking on a road, and a settler woman hit her deliberately with her car and then got out of the car and tossed her body into a ditch. She is still struggling for her life. But there have been many, many incidents like that right up until the moment that Mohammed Khadir was taken by a group of Israeli settlers, six of whom have been arrested. And his death was so horrendous that I don't know whether, well, I will say it on the radio. He was beaten and gasoline was poured down his throat. Mm-hmm. And then gasoline was poured all over his body and it was lit. The sanitizing of that death has already started. They're eliminating some of the most savage parts of what happened to him. But nonetheless, the public heard, the public sees and hears what happened there. And it was so unbelievably egregious that there's a tremendous amount of pressure on Israel, or was a tremendous amount of pressure on Israel, to actually look for the men who killed that young boy. And that one generated demonstrations even in Israel of mm-hmm. Israeli Jewish citizens against that level of savagery. But then you go on and read the comments on the stories in the Jerusalem Post and Haaretz and the Forward about that killing, and you realize that it didn't change anything. They're unbelievably horrendous.
I think common threads tend to draw out the worst.
They do.
Of the worst.
They do.
People who are feeling the most emotional and often the least rational are known to populate them. But in this case, I mean, well, it's one of many examples of collective yes. punishment, which is everyone has agreed, but Israel and the U.S. basically.
Right. That it's a violation of the law.
Mm-hmm, it's against international law. Mm-hmm. And many of most of the actions that the Israeli government and military takes against Palestinians fall into that category
yes.
of collective punishment. The yes. restriction of water, the restriction of movement, the theft of land. It's not as though, every person who lives in Palestine has done
anything to be
at
punished
all.
For.
Moving
your population into the area that belongs to an occupied people is also a violation of law, of international law, as is moving people out of areas
mm-hmm.
that they live in and that they sometimes own.
Yeah. So it looks like those protests following his funeral procession was gigantic. I'm looking at a still from a video
yeah.
of it, and it's thousands and thousands of people, sort of a demonstration combined with a funeral. It looks like a light rail stop in Jerusalem, which is a segregated light rail system, was destroyed during
those
protests.
Oh, the settlers
only,
yes.
Mm-hmm. And this is from, I'm trying to find the date on this article that I'm reading. This is something that, this is from the 5th. So this is from Saturday. As of Saturday, this is on Electronic Intifada, one of the blogs there.
That's an excellent source of information, mm-hmm. electronicintifada.net.
Mm-hmm. And so it says 170 Palestinians have been injured by occupation forces in these demonstrations, specifically used tear gas and rubber coated steel bullets. There's a video of that young man being beaten up.
I was just going to mention that. That's another thing. A young man who, luckily for him, is an American citizen, which actually is causing the Obama administration some serious discomfort. A 15-year-old Palestinian-American who is the cousin of the boy who was burned to death, Tariq Abu Khadir, was beaten badly by the Israeli police, and that was caught on tape. So thank goodness for tape, as we know from the AutoZam case.
Mm-hmm.
Tariq was beaten badly and held for several days. And then when he was released, he was not charged with any, he was never charged with anything, but he was fined $800 for nothing and put under 9 days of house arrest. And I just read this morning that he's going to be going to court on Sunday. I'm presuming that's next Sunday. And one thing that people can do, normally it's absolutely useless to try to get the American government to do anything about any of that. But in this case, because it's an American citizen, there is beginning to be some slight irritation expressed by the State Department. And if you, I'm going to ask people to call the State Department at 202-647-4000 and demand that Israel release that boy. And Tariq Abu Khadir, and while they're at it, use that phone call to demand that sanctions be leveled against Israel and call for an end to all aid.
Yeah. So he, in poor timing, was vacationing there to visit. So the boy, Muhammad Abu Khadir, was his cousin, and so visiting from Florida, and. And that's the treatment that you receive if you're involved in.
Or sitting by this on the sidelines, which witnesses are saying was the case with him. I mean, he was an American kid. He wasn't involved. Well, I don't know. They say he wasn't involved in it. But whether he was or not, he did not deserve what happened to him. An interesting thing is that thinking back over about 9/11, when 9/11 happened and the American response was to bomb and destroy Iraq. And a few people in this country said, what? What kind of sense does that make? Iraq had nothing to do with it. Well, right after the disappearance of the three settlers, Israel turned on Gaza and has been bombing. They've actually been bombing them periodically, consistently, over several years, but every once in a while they ratchet up the attacks, and they really ratcheted it up. Again, they're saying that it's in response to rockets coming from Gaza, but it's there's a murderous attack going on right now, and so far they've killed 10 Gazans
and
in the last couple of days.
So just background for that, part of the reason it's so absurd to attack Gaza in reaction to these settlers disappearing is that it would be physically impossible for any Gazan, basically, to have been involved.
Exactly. They can't get out. Yes.
Yeah. So it's, you know, for hopefully people know some of these basics, but it's good to review.
It is.
It's more or less an open air prison, one of the most densely populated areas on Earth.
And it's been under siege, under blockade, since 2006, when Hamas won the election in Palestine, in West Bank and Gaza, and was not allowed to come on. The U.S. and Israel did not allow that to stand. And so there was a struggle between Hamas and Fatah, and Hamas now controls Gaza, which is why Israel goes after it every once in a while.
My phone just blinked, and I'm hoping it will blink again, and I'm hoping that it's Iman calling us. So if it does, we'll answer it. If it doesn't, we'll take a quick music break and call him to get him in the studio. He is from Gaza. He's here in the U.S., and we'll have his perspective to share on that. So, so what do you think now that, you know, there's bombing in Gaza, there's widespread violence in the West Bank, there are solidarity protests happening all over the world, all over Europe. Here in Spokane, there's a demonstration today. Is that correct?
Yes, at 4:30 at the Ruby Division Y.
Not the Y out north.
I'm sorry, the
split at Ruby North Division River Drive.
Split at North River Drive.
Okay.
Yes,
and I will link to that event in the podcast notes for anyone who's curious here. So 4:30, come on, come all.
Yes,
and it's an expression of
Expression of outrage. Bring your signs about how outraged you are. It's important to show that there are many in the United States who are absolutely outraged at what's going on and what the American role has been all along. So that's what that is. But it's really amazing watching pictures coming across one after the other of worldwide demonstrations.
KYRS. Hi. Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Raymond.
Hi, this is Taylor. You're live on the air right now.
Oh, yeah.
So it's working out. I'm glad that you were able to call us. Would you like to introduce yourself for our listening audience? Let them know who you are, where you're from, why you're joining us today.
Yeah, my name is Ayman Nijem. And I live and grow up in Gaza, Palestine, and I am studying conflict transformation across cultures in Vermont. I am trying to focus on what's going on in Palestine-Israel conflict, and we are trying to do some solidarity group for the Palestinian issue and what's going on in Palestine right now, which is atrocities from the Zionist ideology and from the Zionist group in Palestine.
Right. And when did you come to the U.S.? For how long have you been?
I came to the U.S. in 2012 because I had the training on trauma healing in war zones, and then I started to go to join my my colleagues from different parts of the world on how to resolve conflict and how to manage conflict in a better way.
Right, and so is your plan is to return home and apply that knowledge when you get back?
Yeah, after finishing my master's degree, I'm going to return home, and we will try to show for the international community and for everyone over the planet how vicious and how malice the Zionist ideology on every country, because it is against the human beings, against the morality, against the humanism, against universalism. I am not talking that because I am Palestinian and they are my perpetrators, but I am talking that out of my knowledge, out of my deep knowledge in the Zionism, and who are right now using the Holocaust for their financial and political gains. And Palestinians at all, they are against killing anyone, and they are against the Holocaust, but in the same time, we are not the perpetrators of the Holocaust, and their psychological projection on the Palestinian people should be ended.
Absolutely. I think it's something that in the U.S. doesn't get talked about a lot. I've been seeing an image floating around of a young woman who's holding up a Quran and a gun next to a young woman who's standing in front of an American flag with a Christian Bible and an assault rifle. And the image I see missing is radical Zionist philosophy.
I have just to tell you that in Palestine, and also in historical Palestine, 1948, our country is comprised of Christians, Muslims, and Jewish for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But Zionism is against the Jewish religion. If you go to Nitori Karta, movement in the United States and everywhere, Zionism is against religion. Zionism is a secular ideology. It is not like based on religion. Mm-hmm. It was established in 1897 in Basel, Switzerland. And Theodore Herzl, who is the founder of Zionism, he was, he was secular and he wasn't believing in God. How come he will be, they will ask for a Jewish state? I mean, the Jewish state, it doesn't make any sense, because we can say to the United States, the Catholic Christian United States of America. It doesn't make any sense because in each country there are a lot of races, there are a lot of religions, there are a lot of diversity. So what is going on in Palestine right now is racism, and it is deep racism against the human beings. If you can see in the images of the kids who are slaughtered, who are tortured just because they are Palestinians, and if you go to the, if you listen just actively listen to the Israeli media, and there are some rabbis who said that the Palestinians are subhumans, or they are they don't deserve life, and we have to kill them. And it is ingrained in the education of the Zionism inside Israel. They are teaching the kids on how to hate the others, not how to live side by side with the others. Just I want to mention something. I understand why the Western media are not backing up the social justice and human rights in Palestine because of the corporate media. But I can't understand why the United States people can until now pay taxes to kill other people in other countries. These taxes are a gift for Israel to kill other people. I mean, I ask everyone over the planet, and I swear by God, these funds for Israel is against a human right. And just want to tell you, in 1947, when there was a partition plan between Israel and Palestine, United States was the first country to say that the establishment of Israel on other people's land will be against the moral values of the United States and will be against the founding fathers' ideology of the United States.
Yes, they did.
So, but after that, the corporate media and the corporate military corporation backed up this state. They're going to have a strategic ally in the Middle East. It turns out that this entity inside Palestine will make the world more worse and more hostile. You can see everywhere in Egypt, in Lebanon, in Iraq. You can see everywhere. So I think Zionism is against the will of a human being. I am not talking that because I return back and say I am not talking that because I am Palestinian, but I am a human rights advocate, and I am against killing anybody. I am against the human rights abuse, against torturing of the kids. Right now, 92% of traumatized kids are in Gaza. In Gaza, for instance, they have just 4 hours of electricity. They can't go overseas. They can't leave Gaza. They can't go in or out. They just opened the crossing, which is between Gaza Strip and Egypt. They opened it 3 days per 3 months. Imagine people with cancer, people with severely hard situation. They can't leave the country. They can't leave Gaza Strip because it is on siege in 2007. What's going on? I mean, it doesn't make any sense for any outsiders, if you allow me to say outsiders, or to any mediators or any peace builder to be passive, to be acceptable standards for the humanity of Palestine.
I mean, as you were talking about the conditions in Gaza, I can't help but think often about the plan that Israel set into place when it first decided to blockade Gaza, where they had a plan for they sat in a room and figured out how many calories it took to keep for a person to remain alive. and they calculated the amount of food that they would allow into Gaza to make sure that it kept Gazans at a level of malnutrition, not to starve to death, because that wouldn't look good for Israel, but malnutrition. And I find that kind of planning to be so hard to wrap my mind around. It's so inhumane, especially when the very same people underwent exactly that kind of planning as the victims of it. Can you talk a little bit about getting supplies into Gaza, vital supplies, medical and food?
You know, Gaza is under siege since 2007.
Yes.
Since July 2007. And from that time, there is no construction materials come to Gaza under the pretext that it's going to be used for armed struggle. And there is no, at all, I mean, there is no food material, good. Also, you know, even the napkins, sometimes they said that it's going to be used for armed struggle.
Yes, and rice.
And now, you know, there was inflation, economic inflation in Gaza most of the time because the people don't get the food or don't get the construction material. And in after 2007, the people in Gaza Strip thought that the best option for us is to get tunnels. And mm-hmm. we started the tunnel economy. Although it is illegal under the international law, but in the same time, it is legal to the people in Gaza to feed themselves.
Right.
I mean, it is illegal to make other people hungry and let them like starving, but it is legal from my talk with you. I think it is very legal and very legitimate to any other people mm-hmm. to get food for their kids.
Right.
To get what they want for their kids, and because it is siege under all of the international community can know about what's going on in Gaza and what's going on right now in the West Bank. Just I want to tell you about the siege and before the siege. Like me, I am from Gaza Strip. I can't travel to the West Bank or to Jerusalem to visit the place where Jesus Christ was born, or to visit Jerusalem. Why? Because Israel tried to build a racist state, three compartments. If you are from Gaza Strip, you can go to the West Bank. If you are from the West Bank, you can go to Gaza Strip. And, you know, they built a system based on racism,
yes,
based on apartheid. And I am wondering why the international community, why the international leaders can do anything to stop this, these atrocities against mm-hmm. their fellow brothers and sisters in Palestine.
Right.
I can't, like, I am very mad about what's going on. I mean, we are fighting for human rights. We are not fighting for anything else. We are fighting for our kids. We are fighting for our self-determination and have Independence Day for the Americans because they, like, against the British people. I mean, twice in the history, it is like in each religion, in the Judaism, in Christianity, in Islam, in Buddhism, in everything. Everyone is entitled to fight for the human rights of his country.
Mm-hmm. That's actually in international law, so that people have not only a right but a responsibility to resist military occupation.
So, I wanted to ask you, you're studying conflict transformation and resolution. What are some strategies, do you think, at this point, since this project that you know rightly describe as a racist Zionist project has so much momentum over this last century, what kind of strategies can people use internationally, Palestinian people, Israeli people who disagree with what's going on, what kind of strategies do you see working in the future to move toward peace?
I think there will be no peace without justice. There will be no peace with Israel without justice. because in most of the past agreements with Israel, Oslo Accord, Paris Agreement, and all of the international agreements with Israel, there was no justice. There was no historical justice of the Palestinians. There was no justice in 1948 when 800,000 Palestinians were expelled from their land, when their 532 refugee camps were demolished by the Zionist gang. So there was no historical justice. If there is historical justice, if there is justice with this, it's gonna be peace. But
so how do we? How do we get there?
Now it's conflict settlement, conflict resolution. It's not conflict transformation. Conflict transformation is not a short term. It is a long term for the human being. You ask me what is the best intervention in the Palestine-Israel conflict? Justice. It's like, in a simple word, justice. Israel should forget their history in Germany and Eastern Europe, and they will focus on how to live side by side with other people, and they will and they should forget that God gave them the land of Palestine because it is against God is not racist to discriminate between other people to say it is for Jews, it is for Muslims. Palestine is for all of the Palestinians since 5,000 years ago. So no one could claim that it is my land or it is not my land. Because in 1897, the Zionist groups were looking for countries in Uganda, in Texas. Mm-hmm. In Texas, they were looking in Cyprus. And they found Palestine because it has a moral and religious value. It is the history. If you can read the book by Alison Welsh, Against Our Better Judgment, it is documented and it is authentic, and it talks about all of this stuff. It is history. We can't hide it.
So what's been your experience of encountering people in the U.S. in general? Do you think their level of knowledge about Palestine is adequate? Have you seen it change in your time here?
I don't think so. The people here are very compassionate, are very understanding, and they want and they are peaceful, like inside, deep inside, they are very peaceful, and they want to move forward for the human rights in Palestine. But they are stuck in the media, especially in the corporate media, which is against any reasonable knowledge. I think there are a shifting in the international community and in the United States against the atrocities of Israel and against the settlement. As President Barack Obama said more than one time that Israel should approve the settlement. I think there is a shifting in the American people's minds regarding the Palestinian issue. There is a shifting, which is like very slow, but I think it is a part of fighting for freedom, that people should be sensitized about what's going on other lands. And I hope that everything will be very strong in the future, and all of the American people will stand for the human rights in Palestine, as they stand for the human rights in other countries, and they will fight tenaciously against the Zionism and against their deeds. I understand it's very hard, especially in the U.S., because of the Zionist lobbies. But I believe in my U.S. friends and their deep knowledge now of the atrocities against their brothers and sisters in Palestine, and they will do. They will spare no effort.
I mean,
to break these lobbies.
Yes. I mean, I have a question for you about the possibility of a third intifada. There has been talk that one of the reasons Israel went in to the West Bank in the ostensible search for the settlers was that they wanted to provoke a third intifada. I don't know, for what that's worth. And on the other hand, there are now calls coming out in the last few days from Palestine by many resistance, people who are in the resistance, and they are calling for a third intifada or saying that it has already started. What is your sense of that, one way or the other?
I think you are right. There may be some strong possibility of the third intifada because Israel tried to dismantle the Palestinian reconciliation between Fatah
yes.
and Hamas parties.
Yes.
And there's now, and there is very afraid about the increase of the international boycott and divestment against Israel. So they want to change the paradigm of thinking. They want to, they want to redirect the media according to their own gain, financial or political. Because the negotiation, in terms of Palestinians, because the negotiation was failed, and they believe that the negotiation system with Israel will not work because there is no procedural justice. There is no, if you are dealing with me as you are superior and I am inferior, this is not mediation. This is not negotiation. And also the USA mediator, and the assistant of the US mediator is Martin Indyk, who was like the Israeli ambassador, and he's Zionist. How come you can mediate for the peace process in Palestine? So the first thing, as I told you, international boycott, negotiation, the failure of negotiation, there was no procedural justice, and if you live in Palestine for just 1 week, even if you are American, you will ask for a third intifada. I believe if you go to Palestine in just 1 week and witness what's going on there, the abuse of human rights.
Yeah, absolutely.
The checkpoint, you will ask for a third intifada.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get the international community assess what's going on. What's going on right now is a concentration camp. And in the West Bank, it is inhumane.
It is inhumane.
We have to fight for it.
In the United States, many of us believe that the very best tool that we have to support Palestinian freedom is the boycott, divest, and sanction movement. And we've seen it go from... just about a year and a half ago, Israel, Netanyahu were making fun of it because they thought it was, or it said it was weak and a silly idea. And they've gone from that to being very much afraid of it and to fighting it as hard as they can. And it's had tremendous victories just in the last 18 months. Do you have, what's your sense of that?
I think boycott and divestment work very well in South Africa,
yes.
and the apartheid system in South Africa, and it will work very well in the United States and in Europe to divest and sanction and boycott is really good. Everyone can Google which companies they are dealing with the Zionist regime and they back them financially. I think it will work out, and if it if like Benjamin Netanyahu said, it is not too important for us, but I think it is important because it is dismantling the moral values of these settlements, of these illegal settlements in Palestine, and boycott and divestment is not it is not a boycott and divestment in itself, but it is. Understanding of the human rights in Palestine, it means for us that you will our brothers and sisters everywhere will fight hand by hand by either means they have against occupation of other people's land, against other human rights. We should build a cosmopolitan world. We should build a universal world based on human rights as we can. We don't ask someone to act and he can do it. But sometimes you have a choice to go to this company or to this company. You have to choose which stands for human rights, which stands for humanism and universalism.
Mm-hmm.
A boycott will work. It takes time. It takes time in South Africa. And it will work in Palestine. I believe it will work soon and faster than in South Africa, because when they are trying to explode again and again against the Palestinian people in Gaza Strip, and when are trying to make everything harder, that means they are very weak.
That's a good point. I think I had a question to follow up on Marianne's question about the Third Intifada. And for people who might be listening who aren't terribly familiar, the First and Second Intifadas were uprisings within the West Bank, Gaza, that resulted in further, backlash from the military, further tightening down of Gaza into its current state as basically an open-air prison. People can't often leave or get supplies, as we discussed earlier. When I went to the West Bank for almost 2 weeks last year, and many of the younger people I talked to, particularly, and also the people, their parents, people in their 40s who remember the Second Intifada, were really hesitant about that idea. They're hesitant about engaging in any sort of violence, even in self-defense, because of remembering the reaction to it, remembering the fear that it spawned and everything like that. What's your take on that? And how does nonviolence and self-defense play into the politics of an uprising, of an intifada?
There are a lot of active nonviolent campaigns in Palestine, which is, we call it popular nonviolence. And if you just track the information on Palestine, you will find that the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, supported the popular resistance against the occupation. But for some of the Palestinian people, that popular or active nonviolence will not work out, because they are starting to work nonviolently and to work for peace, but Israel don't care. Israel starts to establish settlements to try to dismantle the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is very holy for the Muslims, and there is no gesture of hope with those guys in the current Israeli government. So the people are thinking right now, what does it mean, like negotiation with Israel, because they will not give up anything. What does it mean, like popular active nonviolence, especially when the perpetrators are still killing and destroying and bombarding every day? But I think, I think active nonviolence will work out, but it should be strategic. It should be planned by the Palestinian people so they can fight well. I hope we have like interstate conflict, like in South Africa. They were living in the same land, and we can start a popular resistance or active nonviolence. But we are not dealing with a neighbor. We are dealing with an occupier, with a colonizer. So the people, like, if you just check, there was no attack before the kidnapping of Mohammed Abu Khudair, kidnapping of the three teenagers in Israel. And then they killed Mohammed Abu Khudair, kidnapped Mohammed Abu Khudair, let him drink fuel, and then burned him to death. And there was nothing. I mean, it is a cycle of revenge. It is a cycle of revenge. And Bibliolactive nonviolence will not work out without strategic planning for it, without international support for the active nonviolence. And you know, as you know, boycott and divestment and sanction are active nonviolent campaigns. It's not a violent campaign, but Israel starts the violence because they have, you know, they have ammunition, they have tanks, they have jet fighters, they have everything.
They have all the force.
They have no taxes, guys.
I just wanted to mention before we have to end the program to let you know, we are having a demonstration here in Spokane in support of the Palestinian resistance and against the Israeli brutality, as is happening all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Which for people, local people listening, that's at 4:30 today at Division in Ruby and North River Drive at the Triangle there. Ayman, we've got 2 minutes left. What else would you like for people to know? What else would you like to share with us in these last couple of minutes?
Yeah, I say to the people of Spokane, we love you. All of Palestine loves you. And we will work hand by hand for you guys to just sensitize your people and just to let everyone know about what's going on in Palestine. Because it is not about Palestine as Palestine. It's about the human rights. And you have just to give yourself 5 minutes to go into these demonstrations and just to let your congressman know that we are with the human rights in Palestine. Just ask your congressman or congresswoman, just ask him to back and to encourage and to deal and to write for everyone that we back the Palestinian community, and we will boycott, we will divest all of the products which spoils our food, our bodies, our blood, And thank you very much for having me, and I appreciate your coordination to give me a talk on your radio.
Well, thank you so much for making time. What I'm sure is a busy master's program life and, yeah, a hard time. So thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you, Ayman.
Oops. I think I just cut off his goodbye. We have almost no time left. But, Marianne, thank you so much for helping me. That hour flew by.
Thank you, Taylor. Thank you for making time available for sharing the information.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll continue. Thank you, Justin Megger, for helping me contact your contacts. It's always better to hear things directly from people who are engaged.
Indeed.
Thank you for doing so much of the research. It's hard to do. It's hard for me emotionally to absorb all that information. Which is true with many of the issues I talk about on this show, but this one specifically is pretty difficult. So if you're interested in learning more about how you can withdraw your support, as a person living in the U.S., your wages are your taxes support the militarization that Ayman mentioned of Israel almost solely. Almost solely supported by the U.S. That's something that is difficult to control because of the way our political machinery operates, but not impossible, and something that people work on everywhere, including here in Spokane. So when does the committee meet, Marianne?
The Palestine-Israel Human Rights Committee meets the second and fourth Thursdays at 3 o'clock at the community building in the conference room. All right. 35 West Main.
Mm-hmm. And they're hosting a demonstration in solidarity with the Palestinian people and for the purpose of educating and showing.
Oppose the brutality.
Mm-hmm. And that's at 4:30 p.m. at Ruby Division Split at North River Drive, just north of the river, as the name suggests. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Thank you so much. This has been Praxis, talking in the studio with Ayman Najim and Marianne Torres. About situation in Palestine. You've been listening to Praxis on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. I will be back next week on Monday, and This program will be podcast sometime in the next couple hours. You can find the link to the archive at kyrs.org or at praxisradio509.podomatic.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back next week.